This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider. Nina Dobrev isn't about to be pigeonholed in Hollywood. You may still know her best for her six-season run as Elena, as well as vampire doppelganger Catherine on the CW's The Vampire Diaries. But the actress, writer, producer, and director has done a lot more since then, including her current CBS sitcom, Fam. Dobrev has more ambition, including her own premium drama, like one of her favorite TV series ever, HBO's Big Little Lies.
It was a perfect episode all around. I mean, everything got wrapped up. All the answers got all the questions got answered. All of the characters found resolve, other than Perry. But
right.
That's okay. I don't want him to have resolve.
Yeah.
That finale episode of the limited series was so powerful, especially because of the journey that all these characters had gone on up until this point. It was just cinematically so beautiful, and it was just very powerful.
On this edition of the podcast, we talked to Nina Dobrev about her favorite episode of TV ever, the season one finale of Big Little Lies, as well as how she's trying something completely different with a multi-camera comedy. As we dig into what promises to be a busy 2019 for the star, it's my favorite episode.
My favorite episode's about to start.
My favorite episode.
Coming real, it's the next episode.
Based on the best-selling book by Leanne Moriarty, Big Little Lies was adapted into a limited series in 2017 by famed TV writer David E. Kelley and director Jean-Marc Vallée. Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, and Shailene Woodley starred as mothers in the Monterey Bay area who became embroiled in a murder investigation. Alexander Skarsgård, Laura Dern, Adam Scott, and Zoe Kravitz also star. Big Little Lies was meant to be a limited series, but was such a phenomenon, winning 8 Emmy Awards along the way, that it's now set to return for a second season later this year. When Nina Dobrev stopped by Variety to discuss her new CBS sitcom, Fam, we asked her first to name her favorite episode of TV ever, and she came back with You Get What You Need, which first aired on April 2, 2017. You came back with a great one. I mean, who didn't love Big Little Lies? I mean, that was such a great limited series on HBO. And
I cannot wait for the next season.
Yeah, and it'll be here before we know it. But the end of that first season, that kind of perfectly wrapped up everything that show was leading up to, the mystery of what happened and who died and...
So spoiler alert.
Exactly. Well, hopefully people have seen it by now.
I would hope so, yeah. So if you haven't watched Big Little Lies, please, I mean, I don't want to tell people to turn the podcast
hit
off.
Hit pause.
But...
Go quickly watch 7 episodes and come back in a few days.
And finish this.
Yeah.
But it's... that finale episode of the limited series was so powerful, especially because of the journey that all these characters had gone on up until this point. And it was the dance and the charity event that they were at, and all the women were together. And even though they seemed like they were close, but yet also had their differences and maybe didn't all get along when faced with adversity and in the situation where I don't remember his character's name. I don't remember any of their character names, but Alexander Skarsgård's character.
Yeah. Perry.
Perry.
Yeah.
When Perry starts to have an altercation with his wife, played by Nicole Kidman, and the women are there and go to defend her, and they all get caught up in the crossfire. And it starts to get really ugly, especially the filmmaking, the way they cut that together and shot it with the waves that crash every time someone got hit. It would cut to a wave. It was just cinematically so beautiful, and the it was just very powerful. But what you didn't expect was the one woman who probably, I mean, I didn't see Zoe Kravitz's character. Again, what's her name? Do we know her name? I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember too.
I'm a fan, but I'm a bad fan, obviously.
Bonnie.
I have not read the books. I just watched the show.
Yeah, so Bonnie rushes in and pushes Perry down the stairs when she sees him sort of starting to beat up Nicole Kidman's
character. In my opinion, the way the fight was going, he was about to kill her.
Yeah.
And or one of the other women. And she not only... I think there's a lot of debate online as to whether or not it was murder or self-defense. Like, I think it was self-defense because somebody was going to die. He was going to kill one of them, and she saved them.
Yeah, because he had gotten to the point where, you know, he had been brutalizing her for so long. You knew it was going to end with him, you know, potentially killing her.
Right, and he'd already raped Shailene Woodley's character.
Yeah, which was another big reveal.
Is crazy.
And then, you know, of course, you know, her Ziggy, who it turns out is the son of
Alexander Skarsgård.
But so throughout the season, you know, he's been accused of harassing a girl in school. And it turns out that, no, it's another one. It's one of Perry's sons who had seen
Perry abuse his mother.
Perry
abused Nicole Kidman.
And obviously had played it out in real time and the impact of seeing his dad being abusive. And it all
made
kinda,
him abusive.
Yeah. So it all came to a head in this episode. There's so much going on in this episode. And, of course, like all the Elvis impersonations. And it's... Which is just sort of an interesting touch at this event.
I mean, I think that it was a perfect episode all around. I mean, everything got wrapped up. All the answers got all the questions got answered. All of the characters found resolve, other than Perry.
Right,
but
right.
That's okay. We don't want him to have resolve.
Yeah. And that's where they kind of left things a little bit hanging, in that you had the investigator sort of months later watching the women on the beach and just sort of going through the motions normally. But the investigator still has questions, obviously.
Right.
And I suppose that's what's going to lead into season two.
Yeah, it'll probably be a big trial as to whether or not she gets convicted of manslaughter or self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is what I would assume.
And what's interesting about season two is so there obviously season one was based on a book, and there was no book, no sequel. So that's where the big question was, whether or not there was going to be a season two, what it would be about.
I mean, when you think about it, other television shows don't have, I mean, I wonder if they're consulting the writer to get story ideas and to see what her vision was. Or if they're just making it up making an original idea, but on their own without the writer's influence.
From what I understand, she kind of wrote out a outline of where she wanted to go with the story from there.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
Yeah. And by the way, interesting about the show. So Jean-Marc Vallée, of course, was the director, but David E. Kelly as the writer. Mm-hmm. And this was such a darker, more intense show than we're used to from David E. Kelly, of course, of Ally McBeal and The Practice and Boston Legal and those kind of shows, much more broadcast network pedigree. And there's part of me that was like, I didn't know he had it in him to do this dark, deep, premium cable show.
Well, I guess that's kind of what we're all fighting all the time, right? I mean, just because somebody's known to do one thing doesn't mean that they don't have it in them to do everything. In fact, I would go as far as to say that everyone does have it in their wheelhouse to achieve anything that they want to. It's just whether they're given the opportunity or somebody believes them enough to give them the opportunity. But if I told you how many vampire scripts I get offered... Oh. Yeah. You would laugh. But all I want to do at some point, at some point I want to do an HBO show. I want to do a premium cable. Yeah. I'd love to do a period piece. And I want to be a chameleon in that way.
Yeah.
And you didn't think that he would have had it in him to do that. like the comedy. I'm doing a straight comedy in front of a live audience. Nobody probably thought that I would ever do that either, but it's just whether you're given the opportunity to showcase that side of you, you know?
True, and that is such a Hollywood thing, and I find I fall into that trap as
everybody
well.
Everybody does it. I do it too. I mean, I'm writing right now. I'm writing things. Like, I wrote a script, and I'm producing other movies, and even as a producer and as somebody who's frustrated by this fact, I still, when we're talking about casting ideas for the films I'm producing, if somebody brings somebody up that I don't think is right for the role, I'll be like, what? No, but they just did that. That's not what they would do. They would never say yes. And then I have to remind myself, maybe because they aren't known for this genre or this kind of a character, maybe that will make them, will definitely get them because they want to do something that they're not often seen as, or that an opportunity they haven't gotten to showcase at this point.
And honestly, I sometimes find that fun when you have someone who's known for drama suddenly is doing a comedy, and you're like, oh wow, that's kind of cool because that's different.
Like when Adam Sandler did Click, remember?
Yeah,
it was a super serious movie. You're like, what? Well, this doesn't make sense. How is this going to work? And I watched it and I thought he was great. And same with Steve Carell.
Yeah.
He flip-flops back and forth between genres. And there was one more example that I had a moment ago that stood out to me. I'll think about it.
Yeah, you're starting to see more of that. I mean, Jim Carrey, another good example.
Right.
You know, he's really dark and kidding, the show that he's on right now.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, he plays a father who lost his kid, and he's, you know, sort of tortured and real dramatic role. But it's kind of fun when you see someone who you think of as one thing doing another thing. So
exactly.
And that's kind of what you're doing, obviously, with Fam. And that's,
I strive to do that with every project. Yeah. I try to, if I can. As soon as I tackle one thing and off the bucket list, I try to move on to the next one that'll be different as well. Yeah. It's fun that way.
You know, and one other thing I wanted to mention about Big Little Lies is that, you know, that show aired in early 2017, and it was sort of right before Me Too and Time's Up and all of that. It almost sort of prefaced, you know, this story of these powerful women who, you know, find their voice and manage to, you know, be emboldened in the face of what's going on, especially with Andrew Skarsgård's character.
Yes.
And so in some ways it was the perfect...
Alex Skarsgård.
Yeah, Alex Skarsgård. Sorry. It's too many Skarsgårds.
There are many of them, yes.
But the perfect show in some ways for 2017, for last year and the movement that we've seen.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why the finale stood out to me as much as it did, is that the women really supported one another and their friendship and this, all of them together, they were stronger together. Something that Nicole Kidman's character, maybe she'd had many opportunities to leave him and to do things. When she was on her own, she didn't have the strength to do that. But together, they had the strength to overcome this adversity and defeat this bigger, sort of seemingly bigger, scarier villain.
Yeah.
And that bond and that womanhood is something that is really strong.
And what I don't understand is why my own daughter wouldn't come to me first.
I couldn't talk to my mom about birth control.
Really?
If I were you, I would just let it go. I would. With Bonnie Abigail, I'd ride it out.
No, I love my grudges. I tend to them like little pets.
All right. I'm just saying.
I do the same thing. I'm not into forgiveness either.
Really? Who do you not forgive?
No one, just in general, you know.
Never forgive, never forget.
It's so great that we're seeing it translated on film and in life, and that it was right before the movement, but it was the timing could not have been better.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that must be the kind of show that as a performer you're watching. You mentioned like you'd love to do a premium cable show. Like you have like a lot of ambition on different things. When you're watching it, you're like, damn, I wish I could be in this show. Like,
oh,
this
it's a great show. Fun. Yeah, it would have been really fun. I remember reading about it in the trades and the cast is so fantastic. Everyone in the show does such a beautiful job. It's, yeah, that's... some point, maybe a show like that.
Anything else that you're enjoying right now? Do you have time to watch TV, catch films, or is it...
I've been watching a lot of documentaries lately. What the Health I just watched. I watched Stink. I watched Making a Murderer.
Yeah.
Sharp Objects as well. It's not a documentary, but Making a Murderer season 2 blew my mind. Yeah. I can't believe that's happening still and that the Supreme Court wouldn't let...
Wouldn't hear the case, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
I was pretty enraged.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so
they wouldn't even hear him out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. Brendan Dassey, like, yeah. Favorite episode that you've been in? Is there one that you still go back to? You know, could be Vampire Diaries, could be on FAM, could be anything. But is there something that kind of has stuck with you over the years?
I've done a few shows, and in the one in particular, I did 6 seasons.
Yeah, so there's a lot of episodes.
22 times 6. That's a lot to filter through in my brain right now. So
yeah, that is a lot.
I mean, my, you know what? My first instinct, and I've said this before in other interviews, is to go. Actually, there's 2. They really do blend in to one long 6-year episode. But Lost Girls was one of them, in which we flash back into 1864, I believe, and we meet Catherine for the first time in the period piece times. And that was really fun to shoot and also a really fun character introduction to make. I loved playing that role. And mm-hmm. so it was, and I loved doing period pieces and going back in time. It was a real treat. And then another one was the episode. This is going to sound morbid. Favorite is a bad word to use when you're describing an episode in which your parents die.
Right.
But we got to shoot that underwater in a tank, like this giant facility, and made it look like a swamp. And our car had crashed over a bridge. And shooting that scene was really beautiful and impactful and sad. And but the experience of shooting underwater was, I love doing stunts and I love doing that kind of stuff. And it was having to be emotional and really like get that across underwater with all these circumstances was interesting and cool.
In a moment, Nina Dobrev on whether she still fans out while working with her idols and how her new sitcom FAM tested her comfort zone. From Variety, this is My Favorite Episode.
This is Daniel Holloway. Join me every Friday for TV Take, Variety's podcast about the television business. In every episode, we feature interviews with stars and showrunners from today's hit shows, as well as conversations with Variety journalists about the key TV headlines of the day. Subscribe or download to TV Take wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's My Favorite Episode. I'm Michael Schneider. And Nina Dobrev is our guest. She's currently on the freshman CBS comedy FAM, where she stars as Clem, a young woman recently engaged to her boyfriend Nick, played by Tone Bell. Their life gets more complicated, however, when Clem's rebellious teenage sister comes to live with them.
I can't wait for our first dance.
Ooh, you know what's going to make our first dance really special is when I do this. Can I get a beat? That's not really a beat, but I dance to it anyway.
Yeah. Solid abs, kid.
Ah! Hey, sis.
Shannon, what are you doing here?
I picked the lock and now I'm eating your leftover spaghetti. Or pad thai. Whatever it is, it's not very good.
How did you even get in the building?
I snuck in behind some old blind lady with a cane. Didn't even know I was in the elevator with her. It was like a horror movie.
Is this your sister?
Half-sister. You got any hot sauce or, like, a burrito?
Well, Shannon, it's great to meet you. Hot sauce is on the stove. I'll be right back because your boy's naked.
Ooh, speaking of hot sauce, who's that?
He's my fiancé.
Ooh, fiancé. Look who speaks French.
Raised in Canada, Nina Dobrev started performing at a very young age, eventually landing a role on the iconic Canadian teen series Degrassi, The Next Generation. She's been on countless TV series and films since then, such as The Perks of Being a Wallflower and Then Came You. Fans, however, still know her best from The Vampire Diaries. But Dobrev admits that she can still be a fan as well.
I've just had to train myself to play it cool.
Yeah.
Because I find myself hanging out with a lot of people that I was a massive fan of when I was a kid. And I'm friends with them now.
Yeah.
And I've never told them that I was a fan as a kid.
Yeah. Like who?
I can't tell you, because then it'll become a thing and then it'll be weird for the person. But yeah, there have been people that I've encountered over the years that maybe like were posters on my bedroom wall that are now my homies.
And suddenly like you're working with them or you've gotten to know them. Like,
yeah.
So, but it sounds like you play it cool. So you haven't been the kind of person that's like, oh my God, like in episode 3 of season 2 of this show.
I mean, I guess like Millie Bobby Brown is one, for example, that yes, I mean, I'm obsessed with Stranger Things. I think it's such a great show and she's so talented and so good in it. And I've seen her at events and different things over the last couple of years. And I wouldn't say we're like homies and best friends. We don't hang out on the weekends. She's what, 14 now?
Yeah.
And lives in Atlanta, but she's very sweet and it's a different kind of, but I definitely have an appreciation for her work.
Yeah.
She's really talented.
Yeah. So that's one of the benefits of doing what you do is to meet some of your idols. Sometimes like it's positive. Sometimes they say maybe you don't want to meet your idols.
They do say that. And I can see why. I think it's because a lot of the time when you see someone on television and you're obsessed with them, you're really seeing a character they've created who's a perfect version of themselves. And even if they're flawed, you've grown to accept that character's flaws because you understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And then when you meet the person, they are no longer playing that role. And then humans are even more flawed. Real people are even more flawed and maybe don't have patience or maybe will do something that's out of character or whatever that character was that you love them for. And that can be disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. The question of the hour that you've been getting all day, I'm sure, is half hour, multi-camera, studio audience, sitcom.
Yes.
That's different.
Very different. I don't know how much people know about this. I mean, I knew that Friends, for example, which was one of my favorite shows growing up, was a sitcom, but I don't think I understood what that meant necessarily.
Yeah.
I always watched the show as a fan and I never really dissected it and thought of and watched it critically and with an eye as to how they made it. So I had no idea that it was shot in front of a live audience. I had no idea that Friends was, that they shoot with 4 cameras and that you only do a few takes and you're done and you move on and you basically shoot a mini play every week. So when the opportunity presented itself to me, I was both intrigued, curious, terrified, and ultimately excited because this would be a new challenge for me in a new medium and straight comedy, physical comedy. I've always wanted to do theater, and this felt like a natural next step to achieving that goal.
Yeah, I saw a story since you've been doing this press tour. I think it was either today or yesterday where one of these sites said that you said you felt like you had a little bit of a, not life challenge, like a life crisis, but maybe a moment where you weren't quite sure what to do next after Vampire Diaries.
That's so funny how you do interviews and words get twisted. I didn't necessarily have a life crisis.
You're too young to have a midlife crisis.
No, it's just a life change, you know? When it's different and the only thing that you can rely on in life is change. I mean, that's the only thing that's guaranteed is that everything will change. And when you do create the things that you love or the things that you, what is the word I'm looking for? Routine. Like, routine is the word. So leaving the nest and seeking other opportunities is both exciting but scary, and that's how I kind of look at everything. And as soon as I feel like something isn't challenging me or is becoming too much of a routine, I need to break it for my own growth and creativity and drive. So, of course, that feeling is scary, but that feeling also motivates me to achieve success and or strive for success, I should say, in hopes that I achieve it. And this was one of those examples.
Yes. Well, I mean,
it's fight or flight, right? Is that the expression?
Yeah.
Yeah. You might sink or swim in this kind of an opportunity, and it wasn't guaranteed either way, but I went to the mom set. Chuck Lorre gave me some words of advice, and the Big Bang Theory set and Last Man Standing and everybody.
Oh, wow. You did your homework.
I had never been on a sitcom set in my entire life. I didn't even know that they shot with four cameras. Like, I was very optimistically unprepared. And I don't like being unprepared, so I did my research before stepping onto my own show where I was the lead of a show. Like, you, as a leader of a show, you need to be a good example and set a good example and a good tone, and nobody wants their leader to be terrified. So
you're number one on the call sheet. They're looking at you. Set the tone, yeah.
And to be safe, I mean, to be honest, I was still, despite the preparation and the research and visiting all the sets and talking to everybody, was still out of my element in many ways. But I was really, really lucky because Tone Bell, who had done many, many sitcoms before, was very supportive, and he has held my hand and helped me throughout this whole process. And I'm so lucky to have Brian Stokes Mitchell and Cheryl Lee Ralph, who were veterans and connoisseurs of the sitcom world, and incredibly talented. I really was surrounded by a lot of amazing people, and together we weren't just an on-screen family. We really became an off-screen family as well.
Yeah. And you got Gary Cole sort of like lurking in the background.
He's
like
a genius. I love – it's funny because on the show, my character hates him, hates her father so much. And in real life, I love Gary Cole so much. He's hilarious and amazing and fantastic.
So when you were doing your research, hitting these different shows, did you talk to the performers as well? You mentioned Chuck Lorre, but then what about, did you get some advice from some of the folks who'd been doing those shows for a while too? And what did they tell you?
Yes and no, mainly because I've been on set a lot, and that's my work time. That's my office job in a way. And you don't have people poking in and out of your office and bugging you when you're trying to be productive. And so I never want to be a nuisance on set. I was honored to get to watch Alice and Jenny perform a week after she won her Oscar on the set of Mom. But I wasn't going to go up and bug her and ask for a photo or like
hello National Treasure Alison Janney.
She's amazing. Yeah, I mean, that would have been lovely, and I'm sure she would have been sweet and talked to me, but I didn't want to bug her.
Yeah. Did you one of the things I enjoyed sort of watching from afar talking to Julie Plec over the years was your relationship with her and how important that was for both of you when you left Vampire Diaries, it wasn't just a normal departure of a star. It was a big moment, and it was a big deal for you, big deal for Julie, obviously, and you both sort of handled it, in a very sort of deep way, and it was a big deal for both of you, and there was something about that bond that was fascinating. There's not always a bond between showrunner and star, but there was one there. Talk about that, and did you talk to Julie at all about this too, about sort of your life choices and what you wanted to do next?
Since then or at the time?
At the time, and then also since then.
And you're right. We do have a great bond. I mean, if we didn't, we wouldn't be neighbors in two different states.
Yeah.
We literally live across the street from each other.
Oh, that's funny.
In L.A. and in the same, we own places in the same area in Atlanta as well. She and I were always pretty open and honest with each other, and she knew that from the beginning I had an idea of what my character and journey would be. It was a conversation that we had had and kind of knew about. It wasn't as big of a surprise for us as it was for the fans of the show and the rest of the world. But I think that when you care about a person, you want them to achieve their goals and become whatever version of themselves that they want to be. And she's supportive of me in that way. And I thought the show was incredible, and I was incredibly grateful for it and unbelievably grateful for her understanding and Kevin's support and his understanding and just everybody. At a certain point, you have to say goodbye, and it's always a sad day, but it's bittersweet.
Yeah.
I miss the family every day, but that was what we had talked about from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and you know, obviously the fans still are desperate to see you again, and I know another thing that you made headlines in the other day is you told TVGuide.com that. It's not right to go back to go to Legends. Obviously, you have a full-time job on FAM, so it sounds like that's...
It's not right? I said it's not right to
go back? Not, no, it's not possible because you've got a day job, and it's not in the cards right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm on this new show. I don't know how schedule-wise that would be possible.
Yeah. So no plans right now to revisit Elena.
Not that I'm aware of.
The fans, they care. I don't know what the best way to put it is.
Best way to put it is that they're unbelievably passionate and amazing.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for them, the show wouldn't have been successful if they hadn't been watching and they weren't vocal and excited. And we made the show for them. And that's why we owe all of our success to the fans. And that's the same reason that, I mean, if I were to say anything, I would hope that they would all tune in and watch the new show if they want to keep supporting. And I hope that they do.
Yeah.
Because I think that they'll like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's different, but it's really fun. And I think they'll like it as much as I enjoyed making it.
How would you say your relationship is with the fans? You're on social media. So you have some interaction with them. What's that like? I mean, is that, obviously rewarding, but at the same time, the fans are passionate and sometimes you got to tune it out, right? I mean, It's a complicated relationship, I gotta imagine.
I have been pretty fortunate because for the most part, they're really positive and supportive and amazing. Obviously, every now and then there's going to be somebody who's not as positive. But I try to not let those things kind of get to me.
Yeah.
And or try not to read the comments are things that it's just too much of a flight risk.
So tell me about the experience on set. So what was that transition like to taping a show in front of an audience, doing a different kind of performance, playing to the laughs and of course the schedule, which everyone tells me after doing single camera for years, the multi-camera schedule is amazing.
Comparatively. Absolutely. Yes. The schedule's amazing because you rehearse all week. You get a new script every week, so it's like getting handed a play on Monday, and then by Friday night you perform the play live in front of people. And the show night itself is just a few hours because you only do a few takes of every scene. And you shoot in chronological order, which is also a treat.
Yeah.
Because you do it from the beginning until the end, and it feels like the story has a through line and you can see it through. But it is very different, and it was a challenge to adapt to the differences. I mean, for one tiny little thing that people probably won't understand or know, in film and television, in single cam specifically, the scene numbers are 1, 2, 3, 4, number. They're numbers. In multicam, it's A, B, C, D, cold open, tag. There's like weird names for things. So that took me a while to figure out and like read a call sheet. I eventually gave up and was just like, just tell me what's next.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I can't figure these out. And then in other ways, it was different. Like you mentioned the laughter and having to hold for laughter because it is a live audience. And there's a lot of punchlines. The audience laughs, and in our case, laughs very, very loud and hard, and that's a great sign, and we're very grateful for it. But the pilot, when I was shooting, I didn't know Not that I didn't know that was going to happen. It takes a little while to figure out when to come back in, how long to wait for the laughter. Do you cut them off so that you can continue the scene, or do you wait for it to die down and then you go back in? And it was strange.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, I got into a groove and I feel like I figured it out.
Yeah. And how many shows, episodes? You taped all 13 already?
We taped all 13, yeah. Yeah, so, we just wrapped a few weeks ago, so we're getting them out immediately.
Yeah, yeah,
which is exciting.
So and now, yeah, and it's kind of the waiting period. But by the end, did you feel like, how did the show evolve? How did your character evolve? What's
I definitely felt like we found our characters throughout the season. The writers don't necessarily also know where things are going to go, or it's a ever evolving process, and even to the point where we'll rehearse all week and we'll plan certain things, but the lines will change every night. Like, we get a brand new script every single night based on how the date went. And on tape night, we'll do the scene and then they'll come in and fly in new jokes and new lines. And you just sort of have to adapt in the moment, absorb the lines and spit them out and hope that the jokes land, which is another scary feeling. But somehow, because of the adrenaline and the pressure in the moment, it usually worked out,
yeah,
which was really nice.
And now that you've done it for 13 episodes, I mean, you feel like you've got this. You got the rhythm now.
Feel like I have the rhythm more than I did before, and was sad that we were rapping, because I, by that point, was like, now wait, I'm in the groove now. Yeah. You're telling me we have to leave and wait and then come back later, maybe, if the show does well. So I had a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in success, you'll do 24, 25 next year, and that's a rarity in this day and age.
25? Really? Are you sure?
If you're a huge hit, so keep your fingers crossed.
We'll see.
Final thoughts, 2019, what are you excited for? I know you've got a couple of things in the can, Beyond Fam.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to in the coming year?
You know, we don't have dates for some of them, but I shot a film in Toronto. Oh, I remembered what the example was, the transformations, the ones that you wouldn't expect of someone. Uh-huh. So I shot a movie with Damian Lewis, who is best known for Billions and Homeland. Yeah. Never in a million years would have thought to cast him as Mayor Rob Ford of Toronto.
Right.
And yet Damian put the fat suit on, the prosthetics. He studied the Canadian accent and his mannerisms. It was a little eerie how spot on he was and how great he was for that role. But it wasn't something that I ever would have imagined or thought, you know. The way you didn't know he had it in him. Like, I knew he was talented, but I didn't know.
Whole other side.
Yeah. Like, to the point where in Run This Town, when we were shooting this one big pivotal scene, he really sounded like Mayor Rob Ford.
Yeah.
His accent was so spot on. And he's British. Damian is British. Yeah. I never heard him speak with a British accent. He would speak like that in between setups as well, even when we weren't shooting. And then when we wrapped, it's almost like he forgot that the production was completely wrapped. And he continued to talk like Rob Ford.
took a couple days to get it out of him.
I had to tell him. I was like, you know, you can stop now. Like, you can, I actually would like you to stop.
Now it's just creepy.
It's not that. I was like, what do you really sound like? I've never heard your voice. He was very talented and funny.
Yeah. That's great.
And then I did a cool movie that I'm excited about called Lucky Day. And in that film, I had to speak French on camera. And then when I spoke English with a French accent. So that was another challenge.
Yeah.
It's more of a thriller, kind of a thriller comedy, if you will.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that I have coming up that I'm excited about.
That's great. So 2019, I mean, it's off to a big start, of course, with Fam, first on CBS. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to it. Well,
please tune in, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, they know a thing or two about multi-camera comedies on CBS.
Yeah, they've done one or two.
Yeah,
you're right.
So I think you're in okay shape. So, well, thanks, Nina. Thanks for stopping by. And good luck with everything in 2019.
You too. And right. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Nina. Absolutely. And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest pick. And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.